Everybody, Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program. Thanks for tuning in. Stick around. We have do we have any fun or frivolity tonight, Kathy, or is it all just the usual bleh? You want to go home? You want to just, well, we are home. Do you want to just back it up and say to hell with it tonight? Man.
I think it's the American Idol final tonight.
Oh, it is?
I think so.
We're competing with the American Idol final?
It may be over.
Damn, what to do? Let me think for a second here. Compete with the American Idol final. I read something today, a report out of the UK says that still is the number one program in the United States of America, the American Idol. I wish that Survivor was still, you know, the big popular number one show like it was 10 years ago.
Well, how many times can you stick a whole bunch of people out somewhere and say, okay, go fend for yourselves and form alliances? I mean, we've pretty much done that with the Republican
Party. So that's where Elizabeth Hasselbeck comes from, huh? I can't get over that. You told me that last night. I can't get over it. How about this Michael Steele? He is the head of the Republican National Committee. And apparently Michael Steele is attempting to, his words, turn the page on a troubled period for both his party and his own leadership. He gave a speech today at the, there's a convention going on of Republican State Party Chairman, I believe. Is that? Yeah, Republican State Party Chairman. And this is his first big speech to party honchos since he took over in January. And what he's trying to do, obviously, is make all of this come to an end, this infighting in the Republican Party. I think it's great entertainment. I mean, as long as the Republican Party has Joe the Plumber and General Glenn Beck and Lieutenant Sean Hannity and Major Rush Limbaugh as their leaders, man, I'm all for it. Said, no, don't end anything, Michael. Jesus Christ, give the people a laugh. Republican Party caused more misery over the past 25 years than any other terrorist organization on earth. But anyway, have you got that little, one of the things that, Michael Steele is saying at this, or said at this convention.
This change, my friends, is being delivered in a tea bag, and that's a wonderful thing.
Can you do that again?
This change, my friends, is being delivered in a tea bag.
Yeah.
And that's a wonderful thing.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, a tea bag. The chain, Republican Party, it's a tea bag. He says the era of Republican navel-gazing, done! He says we have turned the corner on regret, recrimination, self-pity, and self-doubt. Now is the hour to focus all of our energies on winning the future. Now, this is a former lieutenant governor of Maryland who lost in the last general election for the U.S. Senate in that state. And he said that the Republican comeback already has begun. And he said his party would stand for new ideas. New ideas is what they're going to stand for.
This change, my friends, is being delivered in a teabag.
Yeah.
And that's a wonderful thing.
That's a wonderful thing, Michael. Damn, that's a wonderful thing. I swear that's a wonderful thing. That is a wonderful. New ideas! Now, during his speech, he didn't offer any, but our, Steele himself, never came up with any new ideas, and the Republicans can't seem to come up. Oh, the only new ideas they have is to, well, Steele said, he said the two-party system is making a comeback, and that comeback begins today. He says, we are going to take the president head on. The honeymoon is over. What are you going to do, Mr. Steele? Tell me, what are you going to do?
This change, my friends, is being delivered in a teabag.
It is.
And that's a wonderful thing.
It is indeed. He offered a scathing critique of Obama administration policies, Michael did, on everything from government intervention in the banking and car industries. That's government intervention. You know, the Obama administration, say what you like, and I think the bailout of the financial services industry is an abomination. But say what you like. What Barack is trying to do is to save these two capitalist bastions of filth and degeneracy. I'm not talking about the workers. I'm not talking about the UAW. I'm just talking about these filthy corporations. He's trying to save them. So what does Michael Steele say? Michael says, no, he says, what does he say? That the government should not be intervening in the banking and car industries. Oh, and Steele calls Obama's plans for health care something that will allow, his words, federal government bureaucrats control of our health care system.
This change, my friends, is being delivered in a teabag. And that's a wonderful
that's
thing.
That's a wonderful thing, Michael. It sure as hell is. He said that the first several months of the Obama administration is, Michael calls it, the reign of error. Let me tell you something, Michael. Get over here real close. Listen up. Listen up. Obama has not made any errors. Not a one. And not a one. He's done everything he said he was going to do. Okay, well, all right. Maybe he still allows wiretapping. Maybe he has decided to reactivate the Military Commissions Act. But, you know, come on, Michael. A reign of error. The only people who think it's been a reign of error are real left-wingers. Is that what you are, Michael? Is that what you are?
This change, my friends, is being delivered in a teabag.
It is.
And that's a wonderful thing.
Yeah. He poked fun at House Speaker Nancy Pelosi as someone who nobody likes. Harry Reid, nobody knows. Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner, nobody believes. And Barney Frank, nobody understands. Damn, that's a knee slapper. I swear it is.
This change, my friends, is being delivered in a teabag.
Yeah.
And that's a wonderful thing.
The tough anti-Obama rhetoric was Michael Steele's attempt to demonstrate to Republican Party activists and organizers and maybe also to the national media that, you know, Mr. Obama's personal popularity is not going to stop the GOP from aggressively opposing his policies. But, Michael, what is the Republican Party for? Oh, that's right. Tax cuts. God damn, I keep forgetting. Tax cuts. According to ABC News, his audience didn't seem to mind that the speech was light on forward-looking policy prescriptions. You know what I'm saying? A new Gallup poll out this week found the Democrats now enjoy a 14-point edge over Republicans nationwide. That's including everybody, man, woman, Black, white, Jew, Gentile, gay, straight, a 14-point edge. And as long as Limbaugh and Gingrich and Dick Cheney continue to dominate the discussion and stick all of their large asses out there for normal people to kick, Michael Steele is going to have an awful lot of fun trying to turn the Republican Party.
This change, my friends.
Around.
Is being delivered in a teabag,
so
and that's a wonderful thing.
So is your mama. Your mama's being delivered in a teabag. Oh my God!
Oh. What does that mean?
It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything. That's the way. That's an homage to General Glenn Beck. You see, this change is being delivered in a tea bag. And that is a wonderful thing. This happens to be Malcolm X's birthday. Imagine if Malcolm X heard this clown say something like that.
And it makes me think there must be something wrong with me. Out of all the hours thinking, somehow I've lost my mind. But I'm not crazy, I'm just a little unwell. I know right now you can't tell. But stay a while and maybe then you'll see a different side of me. I'm not crazy, I'm just a little in bed. I know right now you don't care.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more Mike Malloy.
Acting, now that's for anyone asking. Give me one to pass them. Drip, drip, drop, there it goes in there, gas them. Now you coming out the side of your face, you tapping right into your memory bank. Same. So click at the ticket, let's see your seatbelt fastened. Trunk rattling, like 2 minutes in the back seat rattling. Speaker box vibrate the tag, make it sound like aluminum cans in a bag. But I know y'all want it.
21 past the hour. Raw Story is reporting this a little bit by Lanny Davis. Do you remember Lanny Davis? He served as a member of, well, he was in the Clinton administration. Wasn't he one of Clinton's lawyers? Huh? He's special counsel to Bill Clinton, I think. He also has served as a member of George W. Bush's Privacy and Civil Liberties Oversight Board. For a while, he resigned in May of 2007 due to what he called his respectful disagreement, with Bush crime family people, blah, blah, blah. But Lanny Davis is kind of like a chameleon. He can, you know, he can go wherever he wants to go. He can play both sides. He's sort of like David Gergen, you know, who has served how many different presidents. But anyway, Cheney is daring the Obama administration to indict him for authorizing torture. That's according to Lanny Davis. Huh? Davis wrote in a column published by the Washington Times yesterday, Davis wrote, quote, I've written many times in this space that I oppose any criminal prosecution of prior administration officials on torture or other issues relating to the Iraq War and the War on Terrorism, especially those CIA interrogators who relied in good faith on the instructions of policymakers and the legal opinions published or issued by Justice Department senior officials. I have agreed with President Obama on the need to look forward, not backward. But, Davis says, I have changed my mind about the need to indict former Vice President Dick Cheney for complicity in illegal torture. And then Davis goes on in his column and says his insistence, Cheney's, on putting himself on multiple TV programs and conservative radio talk shows, not only defending torture, but offering the defense that it worked, has changed my mind. Not only that, he went on to attack Mr. Obama as weakening the United States in the war on terrorism because Mr. Obama immediately announced that torture would no longer be allowed. Those are fighting words. They're also, in my view, reckless and irresponsible. They seem to be laying down a market that in case, God forbid, there is a terrorist attack, Mr. Cheney can be the first to blame it on Mr. Obama's policies and say, I told you so. Even more, Lanny Davis goes on, this guy talks a lot and he writes a lot. Even more, they seem to be an in-your-face dare by Mr. Cheney to the U.S. criminal justice system. I'm Dick Cheney. I approve violations of the law in the name of the war on terror. And what are you going to do about it? So as to Mr. Cheney, Lanny Davis concludes, I think it's time to take him up on his implicit dare and indict him for violating the 1994 federal law against torture. Well, okay, yeah, we can agree, Lanny, with your conclusion, but the way you get there sucks. It really does, Lanny, because you are one of those weaselly, oily Democrat, Republican, Democrat, no, hard to tell. But Lanny, if you come to the conclusion that we should indict Dick Cheney because he's starting to piss you off with his arrogance and his appearance on talk shows, what does that say, Lanny, about you? Well, to me, it speaks volumes. I get the opinion that what you're saying, if somebody goes berserk and shoots somebody dead in Fargo, North Dakota, and you happen to live in Washington, D.C., no problem, because it doesn't really affect you. That's pretty sick, Lanny. The truth of the matter is, Lanny Davis is in that group of Democrats that insist on ruining the Democratic Party in much the same way that a piglet like General Glenn Beck is assisting in ruining the Republican Party. Now, it's great fun to watch the Republican Party go down, and Lanny Davis is a cipher. He's a footnote. He really doesn't matter. But it's interesting that he would write something in the Washington Times. Now, the Washington Times, of course, is owned by the Reverend Sun Myung Moon, who insists that he is the latest incarnation of Jesus H. Christ. And the Reverend Sun Myung Moon, who has provided funding for the Bush crime family for decades now. And there's Lanny Davis writing in the Washington Times saying, essentially, I've had it with Dick Cheney. He's getting too arrogant. I don't mind that he broke the law. I don't mind that he broke not just our law, but international law, treaties, agreements, conclusions from Nuremberg. You know, boys will be boys, but the son of a bitch is getting a little too arrogant out there. So I say it's time to indict him. And you know why? Because he's pissing me off. That's why.
Country that's safe, in a land that's clean and free, for every color and culture, every person, every belief. Your greed, your fear, and your lies ain't gonna push me around. I'm gonna use the power I have. I'm gonna vote you right out of that house, 'cause I am a patriot. I am a patriot. I am a patriot.
Border to border and coast to coast, the Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
It's about 25 before the hour. People in a different generation who grew up, men, always wanted to have a suit made by Hart, Schaffner, and Marx. I know it sounds like a vaudeville team, but they were the premier suit makers in this country for the longest period of time. Just got an email from Timothy in Chicago, who mentions that on Laura Flanders' program today, this issue was brought up. You can go to lauraflanders.firedoglake.com and find the story. But a couple of weeks ago, the company, I guess it's called Hartmarx now, decided that they were going to liquidate the business. And it wasn't so much Hart, Schaffner, or Hartmarx. It's the fact that Wells Fargo Bank owns them. Yeah, they have the power to keep this company alive at a factory in the Chicago area or close it. There are about 500 workers who will be out of a job. Now, the workers are threatening to sit down and not leave until Wells Fargo agrees to change course to provide the funding. Now, keep in mind that Wells Fargo is a bank that received $25 billion in bailout money. $25 billion. And what Hartmarx has decided to do is to close the factory and I think move it to China. Is it to China or is it to Mexico or is it to Vietnam or is it to the Mariana Islands or is it where, you know, where is it to? This is the issue that I'm having the most trouble with. Actually, I'm sorry to admit that, but it's true. And that is the Obama administration's decisions on these predatory banks. If any business in this country should be allowed to fail, should be forced to fail, it's the banks. It really is. I know. All the big predictions that it would collapse the economy. That is hog's nut. I don't know how the banks developed such a stranglehold over, well, of course I do. I mean, it came from all the money they've given. But the banks do own Congress. Who said that the other day? Was that Dick Durbin who said that the banks own the House and the Senate? that may well be, but, President Barack Obama, in his refusal to let these predatory sons of bitches go right down the toilet is, in my opinion, making a mistake. The banks need to be nationalized. There needs to be a Bank of the United States of America, just like there's a Bank of England, just, you know, a Bank of the United States of America. And then if little banks want to sprout up here and there like mushrooms in a field after a heavy rain, okay. But if Americans could understand the reality of the banking system, which I don't think we ever will be able to understand what they've done and what they plan to do in the future. But if we could ever get our minds around that, I think we would all bail out of banks completely and join existing credit unions or get together and form our own. Banks are not necessary. They really are not. Credit unions can provide your mortgage, your car loan, your credit card, your checking, your savings, your CDs, your college fund for your kids. They'll cash your checks. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy. The one thing that you can't have at a credit union, at least not ours, is a business account. We had to go to a bank to get a business account for this program. And I hate it. But Wells Fargo is saying, nah, 500 employees going to be out of work? Okay. And the problem with that is, what? We, $25 billion they got. $25 billion. Oh, by the way, a Hart, Schaffner, and Marx suit is what Barack Obama wore to his inauguration. Not that that matters, but it's the symbolism of the thing. Isn't that true with so many things? It's not necessarily the thing, but it's the symbolism of the thing. Huh? Speaking of the reason I mentioned that Timothy sent it to me, but when we take a break, when are we taking some time off? June 20th? When are we taking a week off? June 20th, I think. Laura Flanders is going to substitute for me for that entire week. So. Oh, and we will be off Monday, Memorial Day. We will do a repeat program, or as we laughingly call them, Best of Malloy. Just a rebroadcast. MediaMatters.org is reporting this. None of five major national newspapers has reported on a DailyBeast.com article reporting that that reported that Vice President Dick Cheney's office, the office, right? The chairs and the lamps and the rugs all got together and said, hey, I think we ought to waterboard an Iraqi prisoner, a former intelligence official for Saddam Hussein, who is suspected to have knowledge of a Saddam al-Qaeda connection. Actually, it wasn't the furniture or the office that said that. It was Dick Cheney. Dick Cheney, wanted a former intelligence official for Saddam Hussein tortured. And of course, he got what he wanted because he's Dick Cheney, or he was Dick Cheney. Now he's just, just another zombie walking across the countryside eating human flesh. But that article appeared in the Daily Beast, and we covered it extensively here, as I'm sure most progressive talk shows did. But none of the five major national newspapers covered it. That would be the New York Times, Washington Post, L.A. Times, Wall Street Journal, USA Today. The article came out a week ago in the Daily Beast, and it reported that Cheney's office suggested this torture. And 2 days ago, on Sunday, on Judas Stephanopoulos' program on ABC, Cheney's daughter Liz was specifically asked twice about the report and refused to answer. And the same newspapers that I just mentioned have yet to report on a May 15th McClatchy newspaper article by Jonathan Landay that highlighted comments made by Cheney in 2004 that detainees in Guantanamo provided information confirming Iraq's involvement in giving chemical and biological weapons training to al-Qaeda, which, of course, was an absolute lie. And it has been proven to be a lie. But why do you suppose that the newspapers that are becoming rapidly former newspapers, they are all dying, all of them. The only reason New York Times, I think, is still publishing, I hate to say this, is because of a huge infusion of cash from a Mexican multi-millionaire, or is he a billionaire? You got to wonder where his money came from. I'm sorry, that is a very bigoted statement, but you know, I don't give a goddamn. I mean, come on, it's Mexico. Anybody in Mexico who is that wealthy must have connections somewhere. Mexico has been living for the past I don't know how many decades under the is it the PRI party, and until finally this guy, the tall guy, got elected a few years ago. But Mexican politics are completely corrupted. There's no point even getting into that. It's just total corruption. But in the McClatchy article, Landay wrote, Jonathan Landay, we talked about this extensively on the program, that Cheney, defending the invasion of Iraq, said that in 2004, detainees interrogated at Guantanamo had revealed that Iraq had trained al-Qaeda operatives in chemical and biological warfare, an assertion, of course, that was just wasn't true, or as we used to say on the street, a goddamn lie. That's all it was. According to Jonathan Landay, Cheney asserted in an interview with the Rocky Mountain News, quote, "We know, for example, from interrogating detainees in Guantanamo that al-Qaeda, if you will, sent individuals to Baghdad to be trained in conventional warfare and chemical warfare and biological warfare technology." End quote. Cheney biographer Stephen Hayes reported on the interview, including those comments, in a Weekly Standard article 5 years ago. Landay reported, "No evidence of such training or of any operational links between Iraq and al-Qaeda has ever been found." And that's according to several official inquiries and agencies of the United States government, the very government that Cheney dominated. No post-war information has been found that indicates chemical or biological warfare training occurred. And the detainee who provided this reporting recanted his claims after he was released from Guantanamo and talked about his torture. Yeah, well, you may say that, Malloy, but, none of that's true. None of it's true. It never has been true. It won't be true. They'll just keep rebuilding my heart. I'll be around a long time after you're dead, Malloy.
Hey, conservatives, don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. By the way, the phone number here is 877-996-2556 if you want to comment. Here's another reason the Democratic Party needs to be purged. Obama's allies in the Senate have decided not to provide funds to close Guantanamo Bay prison until the Obama administration comes up with a satisfactory plan for transferring the detainees held there. That's according to top Democrats today. And in a further break with their dear leader, the Senate's top Democrat said he opposes transferring any Guantanamo prisoners to the United States for their trials or to serve their sentences. That's Harry Reid. He said, quote, "I can't make it any more clear. We will never allow terrorists to be released in the United States." What the hell is he talking about? Andrew Taylor, writing at Huffington Post, points all this out. Let me ask you something. How many people do we have in prisons right now who are considered terrorists? We had Timothy McVeigh long enough to execute him. We have Sheikh, the blind Sheikh. What's his name? Drawing a blank. The one who bombed the first attack on the trade towers, the one who engineered that. We have all sorts of terrorists, domestic terrorists, locked up in supermax prisons. What is Harry Reid saying? That the prisons that we have built and turned over to private contractors to run, the prisons where people are locked in cages, of cement cages, closed in for 23 and a half hours a day, 7 days a week, that somehow people held at Guantanamo would escape? Huh? Dick Durbin of Illinois, another Democrat, said Obama's plan to close Guantanamo is not dead, only that the funding will have to wait until the administration devises an acceptable plan to handle the closure and transfer of the detainees. Now, Obama had promised to close the prison by January. Remember that? Yes, of course you do. January coming. How to transfer the prisoners? Well, how about one word? Marines? Would that work? Huh? I mean, what is being said here? I'll tell you what's being said. The Democratic Party leadership once again is collapsing. What do these son of a bitches need? What does Harry Reid need? 90 seats in the Senate in order to feel secure? What is he afraid of? I'll tell you what Harry Reid's afraid of. He's afraid of the attack by these little pissants in the Democratic or the Republican Party who are saying, oh, well, they're going to release terrorists in America. Harry Reid is terrified of Rush Limbaugh. Harry Reid is terrified of Mitch McConnell. He's terrified of John Boehner, and he's real terrified of Michael Steele. All of a sudden, the United States of, by God, America, the country that has more people under lockdown than any other country on earth, as a percentage of our population and in raw numbers. We have supermax prisons all over the place now, where it's hard for air to get in or out. And Harry Reid and Dick Durbin and the rest of the Democrats. Durbin said he could support transferring detainees to U.S. prisons. He said, quote, "Our prisons are filled with dangerous people, including terrorists, and not a single one has escaped," end quote. Oh, really? Is that right, Dick? Huh? Tell your buddy Harry Reid that. The word is that the Democrats in the Senate are going to deny, or the House are going to deny, the $80 million. $80 million that has been requested to relocate these 240 detainees. Now, Republicans, of course, are ready with an amendment by this psychopathic Inhofe of Oklahoma that would block any of the Guantanamo detainees from coming to U.S. soil to stand trial or serve their sentences. I mean, we understand what's wrong with Inhofe. He's crazy. He's out of his goddamn mind. He's just another crazed, sick Republican who needs to be put out to pasture somewhere. Mitch McConnell of Kentucky said shuttering Guantanamo now could only serve one end, and that is to make Americans less safe than Guantanamo has. How is that, Mitch? Hey, Mitch, how is that? How does that work, huh? McConnell said Guantanamo is the perfect place for these terrorists. Oh, I see. There are 240 terrorists down there. That's what McConnell is saying. And McConnell knows goddamn good and well there's not one terrorist down there. There are a lot of suspects. There are a lot of people that need to experience the wonderful soothing balm of the American judicial system to find out if they're really guilty of anything other than being sucked up by Taliban 7 years ago, who turned around and sold them as hostile terrorists to whatever U.S. Army squad happened to be passing by. But there they go again. So Harry Reid, cowardly son of a bitch, Harry Reid. Harry Reid, the most useless Democratic Senate leader, what, in the history of the party? Oh, he's afraid of the Republicans. Not the terrorists, I mean, not the suspects, not the detainees, not the prisoners. Is this what we're to believe then? That we have become such a weak country. Our prisons are falling apart. Are you kidding me? Jesus Christ, one of the few growth industries in this country is the prison industrial complex. We have places where we can put people and they just disappear. They're like internal gulags. No, Harry Reid's not afraid of that. Harry Reid pees his pants because of Mitch McConnell and John Boehner. That's what Harry Reid's afraid of. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program on a Tuesday evening. Oh, this is interesting. William Burnett has sent me a parody of Samuel Beckett's How It Is. Are you all familiar with Beckett? Beckett, to me, was always difficult to read. His theatrical productions are a little bit easier to deal with. And it's interesting because Beckett, of course, is popular once again. Waiting for Godot is on Broadway again, isn't it? Another incarnation of that play. Waiting for Godot. I don't know. I don't know, William, if I can read this on the air or not. Beckett, of course, most people listening to this program understand, know who Samuel Beckett is. But this is his poem, How It Is, has been called a difficult and puzzling text. It is that. I don't know. I don't know. Let me, what I got from William Burnett is very interesting. Maybe I'll try a little bit later tonight. Maybe I will. What the hell? Anybody want to hear some Beckett tonight? A Beckett parody? It's not Samuel Beckett. It is, William Burnett, but it's well done. I was reading it during the break here. It's very well done. Phone calls. Indeed, phone calls, phone calls. Jeff is driving in Alabama, listening on XM. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Mike. Listened to your show for a long, ever since I found it on XM a long time ago.
Well, thank you.
And I was talking to Kathy there, and I think I've come up with a TV show that we could call it, I told Kathy Republican, but let's call it Neocon Survivor Idol, where we say... We take Limbaugh and Hannity and Cheney and all the rest of those, I don't want to call them people, but whatever they are.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that could be funny as hell, couldn't it?
Yeah, and then put them, you know, just put them on an island, and then, you know, we can watch them turn on each other and everything. And then, you know, and then I thought, you know, maybe what you'd do is they would have to sing a song, a real long song, while they were being waterboarded. And then as a ringer, we could send in John Negroponte to kind of take care of all of them. That should be number one in the world.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, I would just have to, the nights it came on, I would have to not do this program so I could watch it. God, that's true. that's a funny idea. That is a funny idea, Jeff. American Idol and Republican Survivor Idol. Yeah, that would be,
Yeah.
Oh my God. All right. Good idea. When you finally do, just write it up, do a treatment, send it off to one of the networks, and then let me know, when it starts. All right.
Well, yeah, I figure you and I could kind of think it up, but we'd have to have Kathy tweak it because, you know, she'd put the right spin on it. You and I would just murder them all in the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, boy, is that the truth?
You know, we hate those bastards.
Isn't that the truth? All right, Jeff, take care. Drive safe, all right?
Yeah, that's the problem with this job. Too much time to think.
I hear that. All right. Eyes on the road, pal.
I'll get out.
All right, thanks, Jeff. I appreciate it. That would be funny as hell, wouldn't it? Oh, my God, that would be funny.
All they'd have to do is just make everybody listen to Elizabeth Hasselbeck, and they'd all cave.
I'm just real, real tempted to try this this parody of How It Is. It's How It Is in Iraq by Donald Rumsfeld.
There are known knowns. There are things we know.
Beckett is hard to read. Always, huh? So is Rumsfeld. Well, that's true.
He was hard to understand.
He was hard to listen to.
I just have to say, I miss Pentagon press briefings with Rumsfeld. He would tap the podium, you know, all the time, and he'd say, is it understandable? Yes. Is it knowable? Probably not. Are we going there? I don't know. Is it time for my nap? I haven't decided. Will I have a cookie after lunch? Up in the air. I mean, it was like 20 minutes of rhetorical questions and answers.
Talking
and
to
the press
his,
just stared at him.
Yeah, he was talking to his higher self. All right. I have to make an executive decision here. Yeah. All right, William. We'll go ahead and read this. How It Is in Iraq by Donald Rumsfeld. At the bottom of this hour, which would be in about 18 minutes. Again, if you have read this piece, if you have read How It Is, the real How It Is, you know that it is difficult reading, much less understanding. But we'll give it a shot. We'll give it a shot. This is pretty good anyway. So, yes.
Are there Bible quotes, citations, verses?
No.
Oh, well, because I just know that I was a hobby later of Rummy's, of peppering everything with Bible verses, so I just wondered.
All right, where are we? Yeah, we're right here. The yeah, this is from yesterday, and I wanted to get to it and didn't. FBI Director Robert Mueller and former Attorney General John the Oil Man Ashcroft cannot be sued by a former September 11th detainee. September 11th detainee. Remember what happened after September 11th when Ashcroft ordered the rounding up of hundreds? Nobody ever really knew how many. But it was literally hundreds, maybe thousands of Muslim or Arab, people with Arab names, men in this country. Hundreds, if not thousands, were rounded up, charged with really nothing except suspicion of having pulled off the or somehow been involved in the September 11th attack on the country. But one of the guys who was picked up, Javed Iqbal, sued. And the Supreme Court said Monday that they will not allow this man to sue Mueller and Ashcroft. They cannot be sued. It was a 5-4 decision. Iqbal is a Pakistani Muslim who spent nearly 6 months in solitary confinement in New York in 2002. He had argued that while Ashcroft and Mueller did not single him out for mistreatment, they were responsible for that policy of confining detainees in all kinds of restrictive conditions because of their religious beliefs or race. Jesse Holland at Huffington Post had this up yesterday. The government argued that there was nothing linking Mueller and Ashcroft to the abuses that happened to Iqbal at a Brooklyn, New York prison. And the court agreed. So the court's liberal justices, so-called Stevens, Breyer, Ginsburg, and Souter, disagreed with that. They said Iqbal contends that Ashcroft and Mueller were at the very least aware of the detention policy and condoned it and perhaps even took part in devising it and should be given the detainee. Iqbal should be given a chance to prove his claims in court. So there goes another aspect of the Bush crime family's activities against people in this country that has been thrown into the ash heap of history, never to be heard from again, right? We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Classifying facts, exposing secret agents, taxes for the wealthy, leaving all the poor behind. I am the egghead. I'm the commander. I'm the decider. Cuckoo.
I'm the decider, and I decide what is best, and what's best is for Don Rumsfeld to remain as the Secretary of Defense.
Sitting in a White House garden, talking to the Lord. But my thoughts would be busy, busy hatching if I only had a brain. I am the egghead. I'm the commander. I'm the decider.
You're listening to Mike Malloy. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
Past the hour. All right, now remember, coming up after this break at the bottom of the hour, we're going to read How It Is in Iraq by Donald Rumsfeld. Actually written by William Burnett, a parody? How do you parody Samuel Beckett? But it is written in the style of How It Is by Samuel Beckett. If you are a Beckett fan and you are Legion, you may like this. You may not. We'll see. Nan is calling from St. Louis, listening on XM. Hey, Nan.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
You may have already said this because I have my radio turned off and I was talking to Kathy, but they did vote 90-5 to cut the funding for closing Guantanamo Bay.
Yeah.
And Dick Durbin voted in the affirmative.
To provide the money?
No, they're not going to provide it.
Yeah, Durbin voted not to provide it.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder who the five people were who voted to provide the money. That would be, I need to find that out, I guess.
It's on C-SPAN. They'll tell you. But
what does that say to you about the Democrats in the Senate voting not to provide funds to close this torture
camp? Well, I've always felt like elected Democrats are Republicans. They are. Look at their voting record.
Now wait a minute. Say that again. Elected Democrats are Republicans.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Republican light or just straight ahead Republicans?
Well, I mean, they say they're Democrats, but
yeah.
they vote, everything they vote on is against the population, the middle class.
It sure as hell seems that way. I may be wrong here, but I kind of feel like Dick Durbin is a good senator, isn't he? Maybe this was a tactic rather than a strategy. The tactic being, I don't know, but maybe there is a tactical move in this vote to deny funds for closing. Every night I keep saying this. Well, maybe Barack Obama's going to do this. Well, maybe the Democrats are going to do that. So here I go again.
We keep making excuses.
Yeah, don't we?
After excuses. And I've decided that the population is kind of analogous to a marriage that one of the partners is having an affair and cheating.
Yeah.
At first you deny it, then more suspicions, then, well, you don't, as long as you don't have to look at it and know for sure that it's really going on, then you can, then you don't have to deal with it. You don't have to disrupt your life.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that's what we're doing.
Well, maybe so, but, it's one thing to play out that scenario you just mentioned. It's something else when you have an entire political party that you really have had faith is going to change things, and so many of them just turn out to be the same old, right? Of course, that's not a surprise. I mean, I don't mean to sound shocked, Nan, any more than you are.
No, they just keep betraying
right.
us, and we keep saying, okay.
This is like what the Republicans do to the religious right. They just keep jerking them around.
Well, here, let me read you this one sentence out of this book
okay.
I'm reading. It's called A Necessary Evil and Other Constitutional Myths, because this kind of sums up the our Congress and Republicans. It says, the real victims of the Republican conservative ideology are the millions of the working poor, the shelterless, or the medically indigent who have been told over and over throughout these years that they must lack medical care or a living wage in the name of their very own liberties and freedoms. Better for them to starve than to be enslaved by big government.
Yeah, isn't that insane?
Yes.
Isn't that just insane?
But you know what? After reading this entire book, I can give a quick synopsis in one sentence, which says, a citizenry that is intentionally and willfully ignorant deserves the government they get.
Yeah, isn't that the truth? And if there's anything that one can say definitively about us in this country, is that for the most part we are willfully ignorant.
Yes, we are, and people don't even want to listen.
I know. All right, listen. Thanks, Nan. I appreciate
Thank
that.
Thank you. You're
All right.
my hero.
No. Hero's nothing but a sandwich. Thanks, Nan.
Bye.
All right, you take care.
I heard on NPR earlier that there was little chance of that Gitmo funding passing, but mainly because all the Democrats are waiting for President Obama to come out with a concrete plan of where he's going to put everybody, the detainees.
Well, that to me is hog's nut. Where do you put detainees? Where do you put people who have been arrested, if they've been arrested? And charged with terror? These people haven't even been charged yet. Shouldn't they first get a preliminary hearing?
Yeah, but there just hasn't been any plan yet to do, you know, what we're going to close it, and then what? You know.
Bring the people here, put them in a secure location.
You should be in Congress.
Maybe Cheney's old bunker, and then one by one, allow them to select attorneys to represent them and go from there. Oh, no, that's too radical.
Protesters of corporate greed. We who have nothing and most likely will till we all end up locked up in jails by conservative Christian, right-wing Republican, straight white American management. Diamonds and...
Bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. How it is I don't know, a poetic novel, a novel written as a poem written as a novel. Take your pick. I just know that Beckett was... to me, and I'm part Irish, difficult to read his drama. Now, of course, everybody knows about Waiting for Godot. Everybody knows about the fact that he was awarded Nobel Prize in Literature back in the 60s at some point. He is a, what did he die of? He had a heart attack? I forget. Okay, we're going to try this. This is How It Is in Iraq by Donald Rumsfeld, actually written by William K. Burnett. Here we go. How it was before the removal, I quote Burt, before W with W, after W with father, with Saddam, one long part. I say it as I lie it. I would not say the future is less predictable than past. I say past was not predictable when it started. I say it yesterday. I say it today. I do not know what I said, but I know what I think. But I assume I say it now. That's what I said. I predict I will say it tomorrow. I say it now, full state, last version. No, not last, but next to last. See, this now I hear what you say as ill said. You say what I say ill said. What I say is wrong. Here then. This now I say, then the absence of evidence is not evidence of absence, but as you say that I say, then this is evidence of absence of mind. Preposterous, I say to you, preposterous. Here then, now this, what remains here is bits and scraps of the truth after media, before media, during media, only shreds of truth, as if the media, the left media, had a can opener and carve L-I-E across White House lawn. See it now. Reports that say that something hasn't happened are always interesting to me, as we know there are known knowns, there are things we know we know. We also know there are known unknowns, that is to say, we know there are some, I say it here in the dark, the ones we don't know, can't know, won't know what they don't know, can't hurt, won't hurt us. If I said yes, that would then suggest that that might be the only place where it might be done, which would not be accurate, necessarily accurate, accurate. Yes, I say it as I'm told it. It might also not be inaccurate, but I'm disinclined to mislead anyone. It was spoken to me as such by one maybe too impossible to tell, roving in corridors of dark. How it was before the removal, I quote Burp, before W with W, after W with father, with Saddam. Happy picture, smiling hand, shake, one long part, I lie down as I say it. There's another way to phrase that, and that is that the absence of evidence is not the evidence of absence. It is basically saying, I'm saying, as I hear it, the same thing in a different way, simply because you do not have evidence that something does exist does not mean that you have evidence that it doesn't exist. Soon, unbearable thump on skull, dark memories of landing on head out of tree. Yes, on head, must have been 5, no 6, landed on skull, perhaps 7, rushed to hospital, landed on head, long fall. Now, look at me, I'm fine. I don't know what facts are, but somebody's certainly going to sit down with him, find out what he knows that they may not know, not what I know or knew before, during, after, and make sure he knows what they know that he may not know, so that we all will certainly not know. As you know, you go to war with the army you have, not the army you might want or wish to have at a later time. I say it now as I hear it, and I lie it down before you, before me, before the world. Look now, I'm fine. Must have been 7, maybe even 10. I can't remember. These are the last throws, the only throws, the final throws that might last 6 months. No, 6 years. I swear, I think it was when I was 7. Oh, heaven only knows. Maybe 7 years, but no, this pulling out is like putting in, only better now because the gun is fired. We know that. You know what I know is spraying the truth. The truth, I speak it here before W, with W, after W, with W's father, smiling, shaking hands, years after falling on head, years before photographs of underwear, I'm famous. I shook the underwear man's hand, burp. If I know the answer, I'll tell you the answer. If I don't, I'll just respond here now. I say it as I'm told it cleverly. I'll answer cleverly. I'll go on. I must go on. We'll all go on over the world, in the world alone. Good, good, end now. Long white plane, move left foot over, pull it up over shin, over right knee. Now sitting in the mud. Yes, in the mud. No, press room. Now, long white plane, white planes converging on white planes. Lift left foot up further, over crotch, over vacant crotch. My voice alone here on white plane. No, White House converging white planes, alone here with my voice. Phew, finally alone here. Now to stop my voice must stop, must raise my foot, good, that's it, leaning back 32 degrees, leaning now open wide, stop this voice, insert foot. Exhausted.
Well, I don't understand the problem. I mean, you add a laser pointer, and, you know, that's about typical for any given, press, Pentagon press briefing you ever had. When do you do the parody?
It is, it's about 19 minutes before the hour. Whew. Yeah, that'll ring you out. That was written by William K. Burnett, who sent it into me tonight. How It Is in Iraq by Donald Rumsfeld. Email from George in Oregon. Mike, while running errands this morning, I got behind a pickup with a guy about my age driving it with a bumper sticker on the back that read, "I'll keep my money, freedom, and guns. You can keep the change." My first thought was, this guy must be one of the poor bastards that has had his brain sucked out by the loonies that currently run the NRA and the Nazis that blather all day on faux news. There doesn't seem to be a shortage of such folks. My mental reply to this guy started immediately in my brain, and I thought I'd share it. First, money? Do you know that we're in the middle of the biggest heist in human history? We are now tasting the bitter fruits of many years of unregulated predatory capitalism. Looked at your 401k lately, Sparky? How about your pension, if you're lucky enough to have one? Did you know that the Social Security Trust Fund is gone, spent? St. Ronald and Bush, the dumber, were the worst offenders. They used it to cover part of the record deficits. Ain't never going to get paid back. Your benefits will eventually be reduced. You might have to learn to make dog food casseroles from the dented cans you get from the grocery outlet. The fat cats are still getting rich, and you, or we, are going to pay for it. Freedom? Ever heard of habeas corpus? Sort of means body of evidence. They used to need that to keep you after they arrested you and threw you in the slammer. Not anymore, courtesy of the Bush crime family and a gonad-free Congress that passed the Patriot Act. Read it. They can snatch your ass off the street and send you somewhere to be rendered just on suspicion. Their suspicion. How about the rule of law? Remember that? People that did crimes used to be accountable for them. That doesn't seem to apply to the Bush administration, but it sure as hell applies to you and me. Guns! Well, just because Uncle Michael Steele said them liberals are going to take your guns away while he was blathering at the NRA convention doesn't mean it's true. He lies a lot. There have been no proposals from this administration to do anything regarding gun ownership. Ask your loony leaders at the NRA if anything has been proposed. Obama sure as hell isn't perfect, but he's likely to try to undo some of the damage done by the previous bunch of criminals that occupied the White House. Jesus, what's the matter with these folks? Shortly thereafter, I got behind a happy family in an older sedan with a "I listen to KPOJ" in the rear window. Maybe there's hope. That's the station that carries your program here. Mike, keep up that island of sanity. We need it out here, George, in Oregon. Sounds like Beckett, too, doesn't it? I mean, the Samuel Beckett night. Oh, my God. You people are just too literate for me. Do we have a break here? It's about time. All right, when we come back, all right, we have three open lines here. If you got something to say, let's do it, okay? Let's do it. 877-996-2556. Let's do it.
Because liberal is a good word. It's more Mike Malloy.
In the air, from those nads in Tiananmen Square, it's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the halls.
It is 10 before the hour. Coming up next hour, we have a report from Prairie 2, our economics correspondent. Also at Uncle Mike's Story Corner that I think you're going to like. It's from something we found in the Wayback Machine written by Nicholas Kristof. Yeah, of the New York Times. So have an hour of fun and frivolity to go. Where are we? We're right here. Sean is calling from Quebec City in Canada. Hey, Sean.
Hi, Mr. Malloy. Just can't believe I'm talking to you.
Why?
Well, basically because I don't know. You're the one that introduced me to, American Talk Radio. So, you know, I was in my car one night and I heard you talking.
Yeah.
And, you know, you speak in a way that is really forbidden here, you know. A local radio host could never say what you're saying about some Republican.
You're kidding.
Well, it is. You know, there's a lot of regulations up here for talk radio hosts. And, you know, one guy got sued here for about $300,000. And since then, you know, everybody's really afraid. So they cannot control or say what they think about politicians the way you do.
Well, I'll be darned. I thought we have a lot of listeners in Canada who... I mean, across the country in all the provinces, and pretty much, except you're probably, as far as I know, you're the first one that's called from Quebec. But I thought that that Canada's laws about freedom of speech were almost as open as ours. Not freedom of speech, but laws that concern slander and libel, you know, where you can say pretty much anything, especially if it's about a public figure. That's the way it works here in the States. I realize you all don't have the equivalent of the U.S. Bill of Rights, but what do you have in regards to government imposing restrictions on speech?
Well, the thing is that there's something like the FCC, if I'm correct, which is called the CRTC here.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's the French acronym. But the thing is that they will control you by giving you a license to make radio. So if ever you don't respect the conditions,
mm-hmm.
we will remove your license.
Really?
And as you know here, the Constitution is, you know, there's the Charter of Rights in it.
Uh-huh.
And you can get sued a lot, basically, if for defamation.
Well, I didn't know that. Not at all. I thought the Canadian laws were. I know it's your laws are modeled on the UK's, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I know in England that there are some pretty restrictive laws where it concerns speech, although the courts there seem to have been loosening up a little bit lately. From what I've read, I don't follow lawsuits in England. I don't mean to imply that I do, but I had no idea about Canada. And what's it called in your constitution? The Charter of Rights?
Well, yeah, it's kind of the it's Charte des Droits in French. I think it's Charter of Rights, and that's included in the constitution. It was made in 1982, and you know. Some, you know, you have rights, and if somebody is messing up with those rights, well, you can get sued and have problems.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think of this program? You said it was this program that introduced you to U.S. talk radio. What is your opinion?
Well, my opinion. That's funny because you know that up here you'd be considered as a right winger. no, really. You know when I'm. Talking about, you know, having the right to carry a gun, for example.
Yeah.
People look at you just like if you're insane. I mean, what would you do with a gun? You want to kill people? You know, it's really not the same conditions. But, you know, if I could import you here or, you know, make a French version of you, I tell you, you would rock a lot of people because that's something you don't hear or, you know. Having the right to say, you know, what you said about President Bush or something like that. I mean,
mm-hmm.
that's really important. And, you know,
but if you in Canada, if you have a provincial leader who is conducting himself the way the Bush people conducted themselves, not just a national leader, but even a provincial leader in Canada, you don't have the right to rip them to pieces?
Well, you have the right to say that you don't agree. You have the right, but you're not allowed, you know, personal attack or saying,
really?
You know, you cannot say that they're, for example, bastards or something like that.
Really?
No, you can criticize what they're doing, but you cannot attack them personally because that's becoming, you know, a personal attack, and then mm-hmm. you can have problems with your
well, that, license. That's very interesting, and I'm glad you called. I always assumed, Sean, that things were pretty much parallel, but that's a stupid assumption on my part. Typically, somebody from the United States. Sean, I got a boogie. Thank you. I appreciate
you
checking
much,
in. Call again, okay?
Thanks, Mike.
All right, man. Take care.
Damn, it was our backup plan.
To move to Montreal.
Can't take off to the Great White North now. Shoot.
Yeah, every time.
I was thinking free health care. Molly likes to ski.
Every time I look at, really get involved in Google Earth and swoop down into the streets of Montreal, I just think, wow, oh my God. But like Sean said, we probably wouldn't last there very long. All right, stick around. When we come back, your phone calls. We have a story corner coming up in about half an hour. And what else? Report from Prairie 2. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. Final hour of the program tonight. Let's start the hour with Prairie 2's missive for this evening. He, of course, is our economic affairs correspondent. And then back to your phone calls. The subject line here says, the new American dream, a bigger tent to live in. Oh, by the way, Prairie 2, if you're listening, I have bought some canned goods. Prairie 2 writes, forecasters were predicting the report on the housing would show a significant improvement, but a sharp decline appeared instead, especially in apartment construction. The corporate press dutifully reported that this was in fact good news, as it would lead to the end of the glut in empty apartments. You would think that many millions of homeless could take advantage of the glut of empty rentals instead of living in tents and cars or imposing on friends and relatives. A phenomenon has emerged. Not only are couples postponing divorce, but they are sometimes continuing to live together with the new significant others of their spouses. Oh, I'm sorry. I don't mean to laugh. Then there are the expected 8 million foreclosure victims and their families who are going to need somewhere to live. The builders of apartments don't point to overbuilding as the reason for not starting new projects, since the glut is largely confined to a few areas that were caught up in the real estate speculation bubble. They instead point to fears of further job losses or the unavailability of credit. The millions of new poor are causing physicians to cut fees to try to keep children coming in for treatment, but it's not working very well. We are poised to produce a generation of children scarred by this depression, homeless, sickly, uneducated, turning to crime or becoming victims of it. The mental health issues will increase the number of people in the permanent homeless class. When these children of the depression come of age with no sense of the American dream, as their childhoods have turned to nightmares while most of society went on without them. Care to predict what dangerous groups these people gravitate to the most? A more immediate threat to children is that the swine flu has not gone away as expected with warmer weather, but seems to be mushrooming in some areas. The average age of people sick enough to be hospitalized with this flu has been 15. Flu complications are normally confined mostly to the very elderly. The more it spreads, the more likely it will pick up the one missing protein it needs to become the 1918 killer flu. Throughout history, massive population reductions have produced a remarkable Renaissance period. Don't pay any mind to the intervening dark ages. Prairie 2. Go to his website, prairienumeral2.com. Well, that certainly is a cheerful vision, isn't it? In the Atlanta area, the next big bust has begun. Atlanta always considered itself to be more or less bulletproof because it was from these types of times because, not types. This is a singular event, at least in the past 50, 60, 70 years. But Atlanta is turning out not to be bulletproof, especially where it concerns the overbuilding of the commercial buildings. If you cruise the suburbs, as we do occasionally, the suburban shopping malls, the massive shopping complexes that were built in around the megalopolis that Atlanta has become, you see just an amazing amount of vacant space. What appears to be a thriving shopping center, but when you drive into the parking lot, oh sure, Macy's is open and Sears is open and Lord and Taylor is open and so on and so forth. But then you see these massive buildings that are not there vacant. Ah well, we just don't talk about that kind of stuff. I would prefer not to. Lori is calling from Los Angeles, listening on KTLK. Hey, Lori.
Hi there.
Hi.
Enjoy your show.
Thank you.
Thank you for being there, a sane voice in the wilderness.
Yeah.
I have a question about this funding bill required for closing Guantanamo. Since there is obviously funding for running Guantanamo, and that won't be needed if it's closed, why would that money not go to closing it instead of needing a whole separate bill?
Well, that's a good question, and I don't have an answer. The part of this whole thing that seems a little bit squirrely to me is the idea that that these people that we have swept up, going back as far back as 7 years ago, that somehow they are so dangerous, even though none of them have been charged with anything yet, have they?
Right.
They're
well, that's beside the point, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, isn't it? They are so dangerous that there's no place in the United States. We have the most locked down prison system in the civilized world. We have a prison system that people can enter and disappear for the rest of their lives. And yet we're to believe, see, it's a political thing, right, Lori? The Republicans grab on it, and then the Democrats, being the cowardly politicians that they are, I can't believe Harry Reid saying, this is off the table. Here we go again. It's off, another thing off the table. Bringing these people to this country and putting them on trial, if that's, at least give them a preliminary hearing, at least have a habeas corpus hearing. I mean, something that would indicate that we still care about the rule of law.
Wouldn't that be refreshing?
Well, it's probably wishing just a bit too much, right? All right, thanks, Lori. I appreciate you checking in. Thanks for listening to KTLK, too. Take care. All right, backing up a little bit, Bob in Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. Mike, as a Canadian myself, I was astounded to hear the caller from Quebec's falsehoods about the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. You would not be persecuted or maybe prosecuted under Canadian law any more than you would be in American law. We are not prohibited from making personal comments about our leaders. Some radio hosts make a career out of it, just like yourself, although with less style than you. Well, thanks, Bill. Our hate laws only deal with the worst offenders, such as serious Holocaust deniers and neo-Nazi types. Oh, and the radio station that had its license pulled, they had been warned about their offensive ethnic jokes more than once. They had it coming. I'm a long-time listener and also a member of Democratic Underground for years. At Democratic Underground, they know me as Canuckistanian. Canuckistanian. Keep it lit, Bob. Out of Ontario. Yeah, I've gotten several answers here from Canadian listeners that disagree. This is from the U.S. Oh, well. I still think that Montreal is an incredible city. Maybe not to do what I do there, but John is driving in New Mexico, listening on XM. John, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mike. Good talking to you.
Uh-huh.
Hey, you were talking a little bit ago about the NRA convention down in Phoenix.
Uh-huh.
I was there Sunday night, not at the convention, but sitting in a Waffle House. And
that's a good place to sit, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, when you're driving a big rig, a lot of times you got to park at the truck stops right next to them.
Yeah.
But anyway, there was a guy that came, that was in the restaurant, and I saw he had this little badge on his shirt, and I made a comment to him about, well, did you forget to take off your name tag? And he made a comment that he had just been at the NRA convention.
Hey, can you hold a second, John?
Yeah.
All right, let me put you on hold because I want to hear the rest of the story about the dude from the convention. We'll take a break here and be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
I promise to defend that sacred Second Amendment. It's unlikely anyone will shoot me. Oh, will he ever learn? No, he never will learn. With our fate, he's unconcerned. He'll abide forever by our right to bear Uzis. He's a man who never will learn. Georgie's fun-loving minions always greet him when he visits, and they give him a dollar or two. And because of all the loopholes they have given Georgie millions, it's insane, but sadly it's true. Oh, will he ever learn? No, he never will learn. With our fate, he's unconcerned.
Music played and people sang. Just for me, the church bells rang.
Do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
And till this day sometimes I cry. He didn't even say goodbye. He didn't take the time to lie. Bang, bang, he shot me down. Bang, bang, I hit the ground. Bang, bang, that awful sound. Bang, bang. My baby shot me down.
22 past the hour. Back to John, who's driving in New Mexico, listening on XM. All right, you're sitting in a Waffle House,
yes.
and the guy was at the NRA convention.
Yes, and he said that he was there going to collect ammunition for the coming war on the president. And I made a comment to him. Well, if you're going to attack, have a war on the president, you're going to have a war with me too. And he proceeded to say how somehow under his understanding, President Obama was destroying the Constitution, and how he was a retired military, and he was saying that we swore to uphold and defend the Constitution, but not the president, we need to eradicate him.
Well, where do these sick bastards come from?
I don't know. You know, and being an ex-military policeman,
you are?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
I made sure that Phoenix PD got wind of him.
Well, good. That was probably a good move, and maybe even the Secret Service.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure they'll notify him.
But you know, as I'm sure you know, John, so much of the garbage that comes out of the mouths of these NRA types is just that. It's garbage. It's
exactly.
You know, trying to act like big boys when they understand perfectly that they are not a big boy. They are cowardly little bastards who like to run around and talk about how, well, you know, we're making plans,
yeah.
You know, we're going to handle the revolution. You know, these guys couldn't handle a revolution as one came up and bit it on the ass.
What gets me is the guy was obviously in his 60s. He's retired military. He's driving about a 20 or 25-year-old Cadillac or Chevrolet.
Yeah.
Obviously, he can't afford a new car. He's probably the only medical care he has is VA, which Obama was made sure, you know, made sure that we bumped up what we spent in 07, or no, 08, I'm sorry, prior to the election.
Right.
You know, if it wasn't for the government and what Democrats have tried to put forward to help him, he wouldn't have squat.
Yeah, they these guys don't care about that though. I don't know. I think every one of them, every one of these NRA types who now anyway, you know, Michael Moore used to be NRA. I used to be NRA. I've got friends here in Atlanta, in the Atlanta area, that used to be NRA. Just
I learned how to shoot from the NRA when I was 12 years old.
Right, right. Just normal, average guys who, like I said, I used to love getting their magazine because it had all sorts of interesting articles and stories. About conservation methods, about, sure, it was about hunting. Yes, it was about weaponry, but it wasn't, it wasn't the psycho stuff. And I think the, I think normal people have been so driven out of that organization. I don't know how they keep, how they, you know, continue to maintain their membership rules. I think, a person who, is a hunter, and a lot of people are hunters. A person who likes target shooting, a lot of people do. A person who is believes in the Second Amendment to the extent that I realize there's a lot of confusion about it. I don't think people ought to own fully or semi-automatic weapons in their house. What the hell is that about? By the same token, if somebody wants to buy a handgun or buy a rifle or a shotgun, you know, this is the United by God States of America, and it just so happens that that Second Amendment hangs there. But what has happened is so many of these people have turned out just to be crazy, scared, in my opinion, just little boys who are encased in the bodies of men, but they're really little boys, and they're frightened of everything. They're frightened of plots and spooks and haints and things that go bump in the night, and it's just astonishing. And then they ooze that paranoia and that sickness all over the place until you finally take a look at them and say, "Jesus, God, go away, go to your island, go someplace, get out of my face."
Yeah, and I'm sure the booze that he was drinking didn't.
Well, that's always good too. I'm going to NRA convention to get drunk on my ass. Yeah.
Yeah, he obviously had been tipping a few when he was there, and you know, was, he apparently had come down quite a bit.
Yeah. Well, next time,
psycho stuff.
Yeah, next time you see him, just tell him that you've turned him into the authorities. Hey, John, gotta go. Thanks, pal. I appreciate it. Take care.
Blow something up. That's what bombs were meant for, so you could blow stuff up. Come on, let's roll. Let's blow something up. Blow something up. Blow something up. That's what bombs were meant for, so you could blow stuff up. Come on, let's roll. Let's blow something up. When all else fails, let's blow something up. When all else
Your Day Screaming with Mike Malloy.
Yeah, that sounds like fun, doesn't it? Regarding what to do with the detainees that is part of the Bush-Cheney legacy, Jamie in Maryland writes, Mike, couldn't agree more on the sheer cowardice of so many Democrats, with Harry Reid, the lead milquetoast, bent on destroying this country. In case you missed the story, a town of Montana has offered to take 100 of the Gitmo detainees. Maybe they'd take one more, the state's own Dick, also known as Dick Cheney, to fulfill their patriotic request. And it's from thinkprogress.org. The town is Hardin, Montana, Earlier this month, Hardin's town council voted unanimously to offer the U.S. government a deal. Send Hardin the detainees that most foreign countries and other cities the U.S. are afraid to take. Why not us? Said Greg Smith, Hardin's economic development director. They got to go somewhere. He dismisses the security concerns over housing inmates, former Bush administration officials famously described as the worst of the worst. These are the worst of the worst. These are the ones that throw babies onto bayonets. Mr. Smith says, we have some very hardened criminals in our own country that have committed some heinous crimes, and they are in communities all across this country. Mr. Smith estimates that at least 100 new jobs would come from filling the prisons, a real boost to this small, beleaguered community. Smith describes the town's quest to become a new penal colony as, quote, a piece of the American dream, end quote. Well, how does that make you feel? All right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it is time once again for Uncle Mike's Story Corner. Gather around, kiddies. It is chilly here in the North Georgia mountains this evening, so maybe it's chilly where you are. Not if you live in Arizona. It's hot there, isn't it? Tonight's Uncle Mike Story Corner is entitled Beating Specialist Baker, and it was written by Nicholas Kristof, and it was published 5 years ago. The prison abuse scandal refuses to die because soothing White House explanations keep colliding with revelations about dead prisoners and further connivance by senior military officers and newly discovered victims like Sean Baker. If Sean Baker doesn't sound like an Iraqi name, it isn't. Specialist Baker, 37, is an American, and he was a proud U.S. soldier. An Air Force veteran and member of the Kentucky National Guard, he served in the first Gulf War and more recently was a military policeman in Guantanamo. Then in January 2003, an officer in Guantanamo asked him to pretend to be a prisoner in a training drill. As instructed, Mr. Baker put on an orange prison jumpsuit over his uniform and then crawled under a bunk in a cell so what is described as an internal reaction force could practice extracting an uncooperative inmate. The five U.S. soldiers in the reaction force were told that he was a genuine detainee who had already assaulted a sergeant. Despite more than a week of coaxing, I haven't been able to get Mr. Baker to give an interview, but he earlier told a Kentucky television station what happened next. Quote, they grabbed my arms, my legs, twisted me up, and unfortunately one of the individuals got up on my back from behind and put pressure down on me while I was face down. Then he, the same individual, reached around and began to choke me and press my head down against the steel floor. After several seconds, 20 to 30 seconds, it seemed like an eternity because I couldn't breathe. When I couldn't breathe, I began to panic, and I gave the code word I was supposed to give to stop the exercise, which was red. That individual slammed my head against the floor and continued to choke me. Somehow I got enough air. I muttered out, I'm a U.S. soldier. I'm a U.S. soldier. End quote. Then the soldiers noticed that he was wearing a U.S. battle dress uniform under the jumpsuit. Mr. Baker was taken to a military hospital for treatment of his head injuries, then flown to a Navy hospital in Portsmouth, Virginia. After a six-day hospitalization there, he was given a two-week discharge to rest. But Mr. Baker began suffering seizures, so the military sent him to Walter Reed Army Medical Center for treatment of a traumatic brain injury. He stayed at the hospital for 48 days, was transferred to light duty in an honor burial detail at Fort Dix, New Jersey, and was finally given a medical discharge 2 months ago. Meanwhile, a military investigation concluded there had been no misconduct involved in Mr. Baker's injury. The military also says it can't find a videotape that is believed to have been made of the incident. Most appalling, when Mr. Baker told a story to a Kentucky reporter, the military lied in a disgraceful effort to undermine his credibility. Major Lori Arellano, a spokeswoman for the Southern Command, questioned the extent of Mr. Baker's injuries and told reporters that his medical discharge was unrelated to the injuries he had suffered in the training drill. In fact, however, the Physical Evaluation Board of the Army stated in a document dated 29 September 2003, the traumatic brain injury was due to soldier playing role of detainee who was non-cooperative and was being extracted from detention cell in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba during a training exercise, end quote. Major Arellano acknowledges that she misstated the facts and says she had been misinformed herself by medical personnel. She now says the medical discharge was related in part, but only in part, she says, to the, quote, accident, end quote. Mr. Baker, who's married and has a 14-year-old son, is now unemployed, taking 9 prescription medications and still suffering frequent seizures. His lawyer has been told that Mr. Baker may not begin to get disability payments for up to 18 months. If he is judged 100% disabled, he will then get a maximum of $2,100 a month. If the U.S. military treats one of its own soldiers this way, allowing him to be battered and lying to cover up, then imagine what happens to Afghans and Iraqis. Uncle Mike had to pause there for a moment because the last question was too pointed. Another episode of Uncle Mike's Story Corner. Tonight, Beating Specialist Baker by Nicholas D. Kristof, whose other writings appear quite frequently in the big newspaper called the New York Times. Can you say New York Times? Ah. Back to your phone calls. We have an open line here. The number is 877-996-2556. Hack. Hey, Hack, driving in Arkansas. Hey, Hack!
You're scaring me, Uncle Mike!
All right, now, listen, you have to kind of turn off the power drill and the chipper. And what's up?
A little bit better. Oh, not a heck of a lot. Perfect marketing idea for the Republican Party.
Let's hear it.
Tea bags. Emblaze them with the UrbanDictionary.com logo.
I don't think they would put the Urban Dictionary Oh, you mean Democrats do it and pass them out to unsuspecting Republicans?
Yes, UrbanDictionary.com.
Yeah, I'm real familiar with the. Trust me.
I can relate to your caller from New Mexico right there. I run into people like that all the time. I drive a truck myself.
Uh huh. Yeah. Are you there, Hack?
Yes.
Oh, there you are. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I can relate to that. I can relate to that. I drive a truck myself.
Yeah.
And I run into people like that all the time. I mean, anymore, I'm beginning to think that NRA stands for nutjobs, retards, and anarchists.
Well, you know, I used to take a lot of road trips also, and haven't lately, but certainly have over the past 7 or 8 years. And you're right. You know, when you're driving around the country, especially at roadside, you know, on the interstates, the roadside rest areas or the Waffle House or wherever you go, it's just an absolute goddamn zoo. I'll tell you. And some of the people that you meet out there, Hack, I don't have to tell you or the last caller. But some of the people you meet out there, you just wonder how these people, you know, when did they get released from the rubber bungalow, and why are they driving? It's pretty unbelievable. Hack, I got to leave it there, man. We're running kind of close tonight. Thanks a lot for thanks for checking in, Hack. Chepping in, yeah. I love having people chep in. We'll be right back.
Wouldn't it be great if everybody had a gun? Wouldn't it be great if everybody had a gun?
wouldn't need the police no more, because everybody'd have a gun.
Yeah, wouldn't it be great if everybody had a gun? Wouldn't it be great if everybody had a gun?
I had a gun.
Wouldn't it be great if everybody had a gun?
I had a gun.
Nobody'd ever get shot, because everybody'd have a gun.
Makes sense. Wouldn't it be great if everybody had a gun? Wouldn't it be great if everybody had a gun? Wouldn't it be great if everybody had a gun?
We wouldn't need the police no more, because everybody'd have a gun.
Yeah, wouldn't it be great if everybody had a gun? Wouldn't it be great if everybody had a gun?
I had a gun.
Wouldn't it be great if everybody had a gun?
I had a gun.
Nobody'd ever get shot, because everybody'd have a gun.
Makes sense. Wouldn't it be great if everybody had a gun? We can go out and shoot things. We can go out and shoot.
It's 10 before the hour. Thanks to the crew tonight. The program was engineered and produced by Catherine Bay. Ben Birch is our technical advisor. Sharon Gordy, our military affairs correspondent. Bruce Enberg is Prairie 2, our economic affairs correspondent. Bridget Woofham, Bob Alexander, our program's ethical advisors. Did I mention that the executive producer is Catherine Bay? I think I did. If I didn't, I'll hear about it when the program's over. Where are we? Yes, here we are. Lloyd is calling from Los Angeles, listening on KTLK. Hey, Lloyd.
Hi, Mike. How are you tonight?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Yeah, I really enjoyed your take on the CIA. Most people that get on the air, they never lay it out the way it is, and you're pretty honest about it.
That
it's kind of interesting.
That it's a terrorist organization.
That they ran out of an excuse to pursue leftists after the Berlin Wall fell, so they decided to, and they hadn't created the war on terrorism yet, so they decided to task themselves with studying world economic trends. Of course, they sort of missed the SNL meltdown, which they were a part of, and they also missed the energy scam in the western states in California, which is economic warfare against this part of the country. And they seem to have recently missed the derivatives bubble, which is bringing down the whole world economy.
They missed everything, didn't they?
They seem to have a penchant for that. Maybe it's because they have such a tortured record, starting with Ed Lansdale, who's...
That was the guy that was murdered in Greece?
No, Lansdale was the guy who developed the black propaganda that led to the Vietnam War. But he's also the guy that was in on the torture of General Yamashita, the Japanese general in the Philippines, his driver. The Japanese had looted all of Asia, but they got stuck with their loot in the Philippines and possibly Indonesia, and they needed to bury it. So they had 150 sites in the Philippines, where they buried what would be equivalent to trillions of valuables. And they found Yamashita's driver, and they tortured him, and Lansdale was in on that torture. He was in the OSS at the time. And I could never understand, you know, studying the Vietnam War, why Lansdale was involved in putting down the independence fighters in the Philippines after World War II. But it started to make sense after reading Gold Warriors by Sterling and Peggy Seagrave that describes all this, because they took that loot that they got and they put it into 45 banks around the world, and they used that to do all their black ops with around the world.
Well,
every
time, Lloyd, anyone, you, I, anyone, scratches the surface of the CIA's precursor or the CIA itself, we could turn up more rats and dead bodies and roaches and maggots. I certainly agree with you. Thanks, Lloyd. I appreciate you checking in. Norm is calling from New Mexico, where he's driving, listening to XM. Hey, Norm.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How you doing?
Good. We've been traveling from Salt Lake City today to Las Cruces, New Mexico.
That's a trip.
So we've been talking about things that would revitalize the rail system. Have you heard anything or anything like taking over the tracks and letting private companies run the trains, but revitalizing the rail in this country?
I haven't heard anything about it, but a country this size needs to have high-speed rail that just crisscrosses like the interstate highway system.
Yeah, you know, in New Mexico here, we've just finished a leg of a rail from Belen to Santa Fe. We call it the Rail Runner.
Uh-huh.
But what a wonderful way to travel. I'm not quite sure why we would like to be cooped up in a car instead of on a nice train and traveling in that.
Well, that is certainly one thing that this country needs is a rail system and a rapid rail system between these megalopolises on the East Coast and on the West Coast, and probably in Texas also. And possibly in the Midwest, see? I mean, every place you turn. Well, how about the East Coast of Florida? So, I would love to see it done. The days of private enterprise being able to do it, though, most of the capitalists who have stolen everything in this country are not interested in that sort of venture for the simple reason that, A, it's labor intensive, which means they can't export everything. B, it's a long-term investment, long-term profit. It requires forward thinking. It requires a concern about the future, and none of these sons of bitches are the least bit concerned or interested in the future. They're interested in what they can snatch and grab now. So, you know, the people who built the railroads into Flagler, who built the railroads into Florida, guys like that are gone. People like that, I should say, are completely gone. We don't have that kind of thought processes in corporate or capitalist America any longer. We just don't. The people who run the corporations now, they want quick money. They want to gouge anyone they can gouge. They don't give a damn about the infrastructure. They don't give a damn about the American people. They just don't. So what does that leave us with? Maybe it's something else the Obama administration could put on its plate and decide, hey, I know, in addition to everything else, let's build a nationwide, coast-to-coast, border-to-border rail system. It's a shame that we have been run by clowns, idiots, and morons for the past 50 years, isn't it? Hey, I'll see you tomorrow night, Truth Seekers. Thanks a lot, everybody, for tuning in. I do appreciate it. Thanks for calling. If you did, I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.